to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any agenda changes, deletions, additions?
I'd like to pull item 8.1 from 12.2.1, and I guess we can get to that when we get to consent, but yes.
Okay.
Actual agenda changes then?
No. Okay. All right. Okay, the next item is public comment. Are there people here who would like to speak to items not on the agenda? Then we have our superintendent report.
Good evening. I recently discovered that January is Board Member Recognition Month. And tonight on the dais, we'll find thank you cards from our site leaders, and A.B. Hedrick Farr has prepared some of her delicious lemon cookies that I was able to share with you before. But I just want to say, you know, being a trustee is a somewhat thankless job. You have to make difficult decisions. You have to weigh all kinds of different things, and you're wrestling with limited resources and lots of important work to do. And I just want to thank all of you. It's a tremendous gift of time and reflection that you all give every month, much more, I think, than anybody really understands, that how much time it takes to really study the board book, how much time it takes at committee meetings and site visits and events. And you all give above and beyond, and I want to thank you all for that. It makes a tremendous difference. You're a wonderful governance team, and the Santa Cruz City School students and families are tremendously fortunate, blessed to have all of you serving our community. And I am incredibly fortunate as superintendent to be able to serve alongside you. So thank you for what you do. Can I have a few more things? I'm sorry. That is the most important thing by far, but there's a few other things I'd like to share with you tonight. It's difficult to believe, but we are at the end of the semester, and I know that Daniela is in finals week, and I thank you so much for being here tonight in finals week. Genesis, the Harbor Finals were right before the winter break, so on a slightly different schedule. All of our secondary schools, except for Harbor, we'll be having a teacher work day this Friday and professional development on Monday as part of the semester break. Our evaluation committee with a GSCFT president, Casey Carlson, site reps Martha Dia and Sarah Hapner, Galt principal Amariah Hernandez, Santa Cruz High School principal Wendt Klein, and Molly Parks all met again right after the break this last week. It was fun to walk in briefly and get to see their collaboration and what they're working on. They're excited about the draft and where we are in terms of planning for next steps for our evaluation system. And I want to thank everyone involved, and we'll be working to get input from stakeholders as we move into the spring. On Monday, Assistant Superintendent Frank Wells and I joined the Santa Cruz Education Foundation at the first ever Santa Cruz MLK Day March, sponsored by the Police Department and the NAACP. And we also, there was an AFT teacher contingent there. We had senderos there, the student bands and dancers. It was a really amazing morning, a really, really amazing morning. And a lot of Santa Cruz City Schools students and staff out participating in the day. School Services Governor's Budget Presentation. Yesterday, SCCCE President Robert Chakanaka, Assistant Superintendent Pat Gaffney and Frank Wells, Director of Finance Greg Tor, and I all attended the School Services Budget Presentation. And it is good news for 17-18, which is a nice, you know, always a nice thing to go in here. We're looking at full funding of LCFF and the Governor's proposal, as well as some significant one-time dollars for us to look at in supporting what's happening in our schools and classrooms. So more conversation to come on that. I'm also pleased to share that Superintendent Watkins and Nahal Pfeiffer, the Santa Cruz City Schools biotechnology teacher, and the County Office of Education Science, TOSA, were able to secure funding for Bayside to provide technical assistance to all the districts in the county for NGSS implementation. Nahal has also worked with local companies to secure funding for stipends for teachers to participate in professional development. She's about halfway there in getting the dollars for the stipends for the summer and has said, you know, we're going to get there. And she told me when they started looking for dollars for the Bayside technical assistance, which isn't any small amount of money. It's $40,000 per district that they've been able to raise, and it's going to support us in our efforts as we move forward to implement NGSS. It's very exciting. On the dais tonight, you have a flyer on the Latino Role Models Conference. Mm-hmm. This conference started as a Santa Cruz City School-only sponsored event about 10 years ago. We started hosting at Harbor High School. It's expanded. And it's grown to with the leadership of Senderos, and it includes districts throughout the county and the County Office of Education. This year it's going to be held at Cabrillo on February 3rd. It's a wonderful event. I encourage you to come if you're available. The CSBA Leadership Institute, I mentioned this in the weekly update. If you're interested in attending the Summer Institute in San Francisco, it's July 13th and 14th, and Nancy and I will register you. Just let me know, and we'll get that planned. Next week, I'm attending the AXA Superintendent Symposium in Monterey on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Michael Watkins also generously offered to pay for all of the superintendents in the county to attend, so he'll be covering the costs of my conference this year. I'm looking forward to some time for learning next week and reflection, and I'm available myself if you need me. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and now our students.
At the same time, like you said, we're in finals week, so there's a lot of tired students walking around, including myself, studying hard. The past week was just kind of review for most classes, I think, for most people, and ending classes. At the MLK March, we had a couple of students from the Black Student Union at Santa Cruz High speaking, which was really cool to see. And saw some teachers there. Soccer, basketball, and wrestling are still going strong. Yeah.
Thank you.
As for Harbor, we just wrapped up our winter formal, which is a pretty big success. We're working on our spring rally and our spring spirit week coming up, and planning for other events we're going to be doing during the school year, and how we're going to wrap up for prom and start planning everything.
I'd like to publicly thank Michael Watkins and the COE for putting up $420,000 for Bayside, $210,000 a year for 2 years.
Wow.
It's significant. I'm very interested in Bayside as it connects to NGSS, not just for science, but the whole vertical team model, I think, is long overdue, Santa Cruz City Schools. And I think it can serve, hopefully, as a template for the other disciplines. I'm sure it will. So, good news.
I'd like to echo my sentiments to Superintendent Watkins, and also for allowing for all the superintendents free of charge to attend their conference. I'd also like to include Nahal in that. I know that she's worked tirelessly to get those dollars. I have the opportunity to meet her at a meet and greet, and I'm happy to have her on the team. Other things that I've done along the lines is I attended the first bond oversight committee meeting. I'm happy to see that we have a full bond oversight and that they've started the hard work that's in front of them. I had the opportunity to visit Mission Hill. I'd like to thank the principal. We were able to it was the clay class, but they also do computer science through there, and so very, very happy to meet the artist teacher I'm sorry.
Kathleen Frischetti.
Yeah, Ms. Frischetti, of course. And to see what they did in collaboration to make the time slot work and to really take into account one of the parents and who happens to be on the Santa Cruz Ed Foundation, his push to open the door for computer science for everyone. So I think it was really very beneficial. We had also the opportunity to visit a resource class for our English language learners. Interesting to see how these techniques are applied for our students, and I really want to thank our principal there, Superintendent Monroe, for allowing for that. And then lastly, on some of the fun board, Santa Cruz High and SoCal had a pretty big basketball game last night. Santa Cruz High won. It was a good game. The boys' game is what I watched, the varsity's boys' game. But what really struck me was to see how many parents were there, how many students were there, and how many people were involved. So on both sides of the coin, we had several cheerleaders, the students themselves who played, students who came to watch, their parents, parents who worked the door, parents who sold sweatshirts, parents who did this. So there's a lot of support for public education, even if it's not just in a meeting room. I was happy to see that. Thanks.
I just have a couple things. I wanted to say thank you all for the card. It's nice to feel appreciated, but they're just very kind words on the cards. I want to say thank you for that. And I, too, have been going to sports events for Santa Cruz High. We don't have the cushiness of the basketball stadium. We're out in the field in the cold and in the rain, but they're exciting games, wonderful sportsmanship to see on the fields, and Santa Cruz is doing pretty well. Expect to see.
I'd like to thank the superintendent for making time for additional campus visits for me as a new board member, and had the pleasure to go to De La Vega School and then over to Harbor High School. And each of the visits that I've made to all the schools by this time, I've really been struck at how engaged the learning environment is, how engaging the learning environment is. In each classroom I've visited so far, I've seen enthusiastic staff, prepared staff, staff that's very caring of the diversity of their students. And I've seen students extremely actively engaged in their learning. And almost to the student, each time I've asked them what they were doing, they knew what they were doing. The visible learning seemed to be being the first one across the district. So that was very encouraging to me. And a couple of notes at De La Vega, was very impressed with the two-way immersion program, which you're all familiar with, but was new for me to see. So I'm very happy to see what's going on with that. And then a lot of things I was impressed with, but one other thing I'll mention at Harbor High was to see how those career tech ed classes and staff members are being brought into the fold as an integral part of the campus, an integral part of the curriculum paths that are available to students there. And then finally, on a personal note, I just wanted everyone to join me in sending best wishes to Montecito Union School District. As you may recall, when I was sworn in not long ago, my son sent a message, and he's a superintendent there. And they, of course, were threatened by terrible fires. They had to move out of their school because of the fire threat. And now they've had to move out of their school because of the mudslides and the debris slides. And their whole school community is under terrible stress of the tragedy of what's happened there. So with your permission, I'd like to send greetings from our board to their board, that we're with them as public servants. And at the moment, they're not even able to get to their school. Although the school itself is not damaged, they can't get to the school. Mm-hmm. So they've had to relocate their entire operation, all their classrooms, to Santa Barbara City Schools. Mm-hmm. I beg your pardon, Santa Barbara City College. Santa Barbara City College. So you can imagine what they're going through. Yeah. Makes our day look pretty easy, right. But again, with your permission, I'll send greetings to their board. Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, I know that CSBA is pushing the governor for emergency funding for summer school for the Sonoma area students, so there may be some hope for some lost instructional day funding down the road, so sorry about that.
Yeah.
So I attended the Santa Cruz County School Boards Association meeting, and it was really nice to catch up with everyone after the new year. And I also attended the the walk on Martin Luther King Day, and it was really nice to see. I missed the banner. I jumped in towards the end of the Prescaf, but it was nice to see so many students and staff and folks from, and I ran into Gary Bloom, who was also walking with Senderos. It was nice to see him. And I just wanted to make an announcement. Former State Superintendent Delaine Easton and gubernatorial candidate for this year is going to be speaking at the Democratic Central Committee headquarters tomorrow night at 6:30, so if anyone's interested. She's really fun to listen to. She's schooled everybody on the stage at CSBA on policy during the CSBA assembly conference this year. So I highly recommend going. She's a really interesting person, mm-hmm. regardless of her chances to win.
Well, I'm kind of embarrassed after this because this is Appreciate Board Week, and you talked about how hard we worked, but I have no report. I was busy being a mother of a frantic graduate school applicant, and I lost the whole month, basically. So that's it for this month.
I just want to make an announcement. Thursday, we also have a wellness meeting. Wellness committee meeting is this Thursday at 6 o'clock in the Harbor High School kitchen, and students are welcome to that, too. It's an opportunity to talk about our food service and other aspects of our wellness policy. Okay, our next item is approval of the minutes. We'll start with the minutes of the regular meeting on December 13th.
I move approval.
Second.
Oh, Dee Dee and Sheila. Take your pick. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
A student recommendation?
Aye.
Okay. All right. The second one is the annual finance authority meeting.
I move approval.
Second.
And student recommendation?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Yeah, the consent agenda is next. Are there any items that we'd like pulled or have questions about?
Yeah, 8.1.8,
please. 8.1.8?
Annual
development. Okay. Is that to be pulled or for question?
Question.
Okay. So not pulled. Are there any items to be pulled?
Non-committal whether it will eventually question first.
Okay.
Decision,
okay, we'll okay. start with a question then. And Patty?
And so mine would be 8.1.12.2.1.
8.1.12.2.1.
I'll have to recuse
myself.
Okay.
So are you actually pulling that item, or you just want to know that you recuse, you want a separate vote because you have to recuse yourself from the vote?
I'd like to
separate
just for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, any other? Okay, your question, Jeremy?
Sure. My question is for Pat. I'm looking at the developer fee financial report. Beginning balance is 801, ending balance is 972. That's, there you are.
Sorry, I stepped on. So sorry.
No.
Please go ahead, Jeremy.
Okay, so one more time. And no, I don't mean to be discourteous. So the developer fee financial report, 216.70, beginning balance is 801K, right?
Yeah.
Ending balance is 972. If we were to look, and I would like to see the numbers, let's say from 14, 15, 15, 16 on up to the present, first question is, are those numbers fairly constant, somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million? Second question is, what do we do with that money? If it's a constant, if we can count on having about that money each year, how is it spent? It's not general fund, is it? It has to be spent on...
That's from capital outlay, yeah.
And does it... So, yeah, that's the question.
So, a couple things, Jeremy. First of all, I'm sorry I couldn't get back to any of your questions, really. I'm sorry.
No, don't worry about it. I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Sure. To go back to 14, 15, and present, we could certainly pull together that information for you and give you a recap of how it's been spent. I would kind of defer to Trevor to give you maybe some historical perspective on what it's been spent on prior to the bond. Capital needs, right?
Well, see, this gets to part B.
Yep.
This is prior to the bond.
True.
PB. Now AB, right. After the bond.
Right.
does this money get freed up so that we can do good things with it? In which case, what could we potentially do with it now that we've passed the bond that we couldn't do with it prior to the bond because we needed it for a rainy day fund because a heater breaks or something like that? You see where I'm going?
Absolutely. And the facilities master plan that we adopted, Jeremy, has an assumption of a dollar amount that will be generated from developer fees. So those dollars have been woven into kind of an overall aggregate facilities master plan to address facilities needs the district has. Going back to the very simple concept that when the district did an assessment of needs, we had needs far in excess of the funding. So these funds will be used to help us with facilities needs we have.
Okay, and so there's no, I'm just wishfully thinking that perhaps we could shift some of these dollars to general fund. It's just not.
You wouldn't be able to put it into general fund.
Not going to happen. No. Okay, thank you. Okay. But I would like to see it from 14-15-15-16.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir.
So it doesn't need to be posted.
Excuse me. I am satisfied. Thank
all
you.
All right. Are there any questions or comments from the public on the consent agenda? Okay. Do we have a motion?
I move approval.
Second.
And it's a roll call and student recommendation.
Aye.
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 And that was minus item number 8.1.12.2.1. And we need a motion. Is there a discussion on that item?
I have one. Now that you've mentioned it, if it's 8.12 point, if it's the contract with Miller Maxfield,
yes, it is.
I do have one question. We're looking there, and we're looking there at a 3% annual increase on the rent, right? Rent will be blah 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 per month, including a 3.1 annual increase based on the increase in U.S. Consumer Price Index booked in November 2017. Just for the record, if I could get Pat, if it's not too much to ask, the square footage there, so that we can figure out how much are we getting per square foot, and is that in line with fair market value?
Okay.
Thank you. That was your question.
Okay. Are there comments, questions from the public?
I move approval.
Second.
And second. Okay. Student?
Aye.
Ricky's.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
And we have gifts.
Gifts. I'm very impressed and delighted to thank Daniel Stopey for donating 65 tubes of 75 milliliter Georgia brand oil paints to Santa Cruz High Art Program, and an anonymous donation of $5,000 made to Santa Cruz High Girls Basketball Program. So we thank you. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. There's one more. So Cal High, they get better with each one. Rebecca and Co. Peters donated $55,000 to the SoCal High Fund. It wasn't made directly to Santa Cruz City Schools, but we still got it. So so we want to recognize how greatly that those funds will help us.
We don't usually include donations directly to the parent organizations, but that was a really significant donation, and I felt like that needed to be publicly acknowledged.
Okay, we have our vote on expulsions next. Expulsion 8.2.1.
I move approval to the expulsion of student 51718.
Second. I'm sorry, who was the second?
Cindy.
Thank you so much.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstain?
So, I'm so sorry.
Okay, expulsion 61718.
I move approval to the expulsion of student 61718.
Second.
Go ahead.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And expulsion of student 71718.
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And expulsion of student 9, 17, 18.
Move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Now report of actions taken in closed session. Dee Dee?
The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsion 5-17-18, 6-17-18, 7-17-18, and 9-17-18 to prepare for a vote on these matters in open session. The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees conferred regarding labor negotiations with GSCFT. The Board of Trustees conferred and provided direction regarding the property at 255 Swift Street, Santa Cruz, California, and we will be returning to closed session at the end of open session.
Thank you. Okay. Now, new business, we have the district audits.
Yes, thanks to Jack Henson, he is here tonight. From Carl Horwath to present to you the information on the audits for both our general fund and looking at both the measures A and B.
Great, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Should I use the microphone or if I speak loudly, am I good?
You got a good voice.
Good? Okay. And then you got several reports are handed out to you, I think, tonight. So starting with the big one, and I'm here to present to you the audit for the year ended June 30th, 2017. Towards the back of the report is a good summary, and it lends well to our discussion for tonight. It starts on page 75 of that report. It's called the Summary of Auditor's Results, page 75. There are several different opinions that go into part of our audit, and so I'm going to walk you through each of them and the opinions that we rendered for this year. The first one's a financial statement opinion. For the year ended June 30, 2017, we rendered an unmodified opinion related to your financial statements. So that's the type of opinion you'd hope that I'd be here tonight to present to you. That means your financial statements are free, material misstatement. You comply with all the applicable accounting pronouncements that were required to be adopted for this fiscal year end. Below that, we talk about if there's any internal control, significant deficiencies, and material weaknesses within the district's financial controls. And I'm happy to report that there were no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies related to internal control. So clean aspects of the audit there. Next is a federal audit. Because of the number of the amount of federal dollars that the district expends in the fiscal year, you're required to have a federal audit completed. And so for the year ended June 30, 2017, we rendered an unmodified opinion related to federal compliance. This year we were required to look at the Title I program. And essentially, our programs, we rotate through those programs on a once every 3-year basis. Because you've had several years of unmodified opinions related to your financial statements and your federal opinions, you're considered a low-risk auditee in the eyes of the federal government. The last opinion relates to state compliance. In the current year, you have a qualified opinion related to state compliance. The finding related to the qualification of your opinion is on page 78. And essentially, there's a number of areas that go into the state compliance audit. One of the areas that's fairly labor-intensive to audit and actually prepare for the audit relates to the unduplicated account for your LCFF. you can see there in our testing, we had two students related to the free and reduced testing support that we were unable to find the proper supporting documentation for. The extrapolated effect of this finding over the rest of the population for the district amounts to approximately $6,000, which I would consider to be a material finding. Unfortunately, the state of California, though, has no materiality. And so any finding that we find, regardless how insignificant it may be to the district, has to qualify your audit opinion. At the bottom, you can see that we've provided our recommendation, and management has followed up and provided their response to correct the action that was noted there. Right behind there on page 79 is the status of prior findings. This is our opportunity to bring back to the board any comments that we had in the prior year to let you know how the district has progressed related to those. And you can see there was one last year related to attendance, and there was no attendance findings in the current year, so that finding was implemented. just like conclude my thoughts on this audit. I have other ones obviously to present to you as well. There are no audit adjustments related to this, so the unaudited actuals that you all saw back in probably your September board meeting and approved are the same numbers that are coming back tonight for our cleaning audit without any modification or audit adjustment that was required to bring them to the proper balances. So clean audit. I just conclude my comments related to this audit to thank Pat and Greg and the rest of the team for being prepared for audits. There's several different visits that we make throughout the year, both to sites within the district and at the district office, and we appreciate everyone's support and being able to help us get this audit completed and be here tonight to present it to you. So I pause right now and answer any questions related to this report.
So thank you for that. Just to get this straight, you sampled 25 students. And of those 25, you were not able to find documentation on two.
That's correct.
So you extrapolated that out to the total population and came up with the number of 23.
Correct.
Okay, I got the 25 minus two is also 23, so 23 comes up twice.
Well, and that's just...
That's just
it happened to come out to that number.
And that's fine. No, that's
there's
just
more than 25 in the population.
Fine, and so therefore there's a $6,000 ding.
Correct.
Is there a recommendation that we do our business differently in the future?
The recommendation is that you have the supporting documentation for each child that's counted under either the free and reduced category or as an English learner or that's counted in both of those buckets. As the number of districts that I work with, this area has really become an area of the most common finding area because of the amount of documentation and
okay.
the amount of kids that are being counted.
So this is not atypical?
This is something I would say is a typical finding in a large school district.
Thank you.
It's becoming more prevalent than attendance findings because of the way attendance systems have become more electronic and less,
right.
and this is still a very manual process.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Okay, Cindy.
Just to educate me, on page 75, some of those questions are answered as no, and some of them are answered as none reported. What's the difference between those two?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think essentially they really mean the same thing in the sense that, if we had even one material weakness or a significant deficiency, we would slide that over to yes, and we're required to report those findings in that second, the next page of the report. Essentially, for both of those areas, we had nothing to report. So, the answer essentially is the same.
Essentially the same.
Yes.
Any other questions? Patty?
Thank you. I'm just going back towards Jeremy, and thank you for reporting out on that. I guess to follow up, as you say that this error with the new funding formula and the amount of documentation, I would just hope that the district can bring to us their remedy towards this so that you can bring the numbers forward for the next audit. So it's directed to parties. Thank you.
Right in the bottom of page 78, they included
right
your response there.
Yeah.
And actually, what happened was there were two students that there were allowed to grandfather them in from the prior years if they haven't submitted their paperwork to prove that they're a particular status. And there's a particular code you have to put in CalPass in order for you to code them with that status from the prior year. And over, so that's kind of a timing thing. So there's a specific code we've been told to use for grandfathering them in. And what happens later, when we submit the report in January, and receive that paperwork, we can convert them into the free and reduced status. So there's a special code. We knew we could grandfather them in. We didn't know there needed to be a particular code for those two students so that they wouldn't be put into the unduplicated pupil count. So it's really esoteric, and they didn't know to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Pryor. I appreciate it. For me, it was just the process. I wanted to be clear that we how to process, and now you've given me the opportunity to learn about the holding category until, and then the January follow-up. So thank you.
Don't lose the secret
code. Tell an exchange.
A lot of the box.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right, should I move on to the bond report? All right, so I'll take measure A in front of measure B. For each bond, there are two reports. So there's four more reports to discuss. I'll cover measure A and in more detail and then go a little faster through measure B because they're kind of the same report. So I'll start with the measure A financial statement. So in the cover there, you see measure A general obligation bonds financial statements. So the state changed the rules a couple years ago related to Proposition 39, and now requires that you have a standalone set of financial statements for each bond measure that you have. And so the bond funds at other districts that had bonds in prior years were always audited as part of the process, but now we actually have a standalone set of financial statements just for each bond measure. So as we walk you through the pages, behind the table of contents is the independent auditor's report. And essentially, this opinion looks very similar to the district's audit opinion, where it outlines who's responsible for what between management and the auditor. At the top of page 2, it says, in our opinion, the financial statements referred to above present fairly, in all related material respects, the financial position of the Santa Cruz City Schools, Measure A, general obligation bond activity as of June 30, 2017. That's an unmodified opinion. That's, again, the type of opinion you want to have on your financial statements. The paragraph right below there simply states that, emphasizes to the reader, this is just the Measure A financial statements and nothing more, not any other operations related to the district. Turning the page is your balance sheet. You know, obviously this is the first year for both Measure A and Measure B. So with the first issuance related to Measure A, at June 30, 2017, there was $55.3 million in fund balance related to that first issuance, which, as you turn the page to page 4, was $56 million in the current year from your first issuance related to the bonds. You can see there the activity goes with your additions and then your deletions. There was approximately $1.6 million in expenditures in the first period here related to Measure A. And again, I'll talk about how we audit those expenditures and get to the performance audit in just a minute. And you can see at the bottom there, again, your fund balance ties at $55.3 million back to your balance sheet. Footnotes really are really nothing too exciting except to say that your cash is with the county treasury and the purposes of why you issued the bond. And then at the back, you have your government auditing standards opinion related to internal controls. And again, we have no internal control findings, so there's no modification to that opinion. So that's the financial statement report. I'll turn you now to the performance audit report for Measure A, so your other Measure A report that you have. And again, if you go right behind the table of contents is the independent auditor's report. This opinion looks slightly different than the other one because this is a performance audit instead of a financial audit. But essentially, as you walk your way through this opinion, we talk about how our audit ties back to government auditing standards and to the California Constitution. Related to Proposition 39. And the last paragraph, we say the results of our procedures indicate in all significant respects that the Santa Cruz City Schools expended Measure A general obligation bond funds for the year ended June 30, 2017 only for the specified projects developed by the board and approved by the voters in compliance with the California Constitution. So that's essentially a clean opinion. There's no compliance type findings related to Measure A. If I turn the page, provide some background on when Proposition 39 was first passed in 2000. There's four basic requirements. The first is that you establish a Citizens Oversight Committee, which you have done. You're required to spend your bond funds only for authorized purposes and not for administrative salaries and other operating costs. You're required to have a performance audit, which is what you're holding right now. And you're required to have a financial audit, which is what we just covered. Next section covers the background of Measure A and how it was approved and put forth to the voters. And essentially, the meat of the report is on page 3. This is where we cover our scope and methodology and the conclusions related to the work that we perform. So again, for the year ended June 30, 2017, there was $1.6 million worth of expenditures. That's the same number it ties forward from the financial statement report. And you can see in the third bullet point where it says we selected a sample of expenditures representing just over $1 million, which represents 63% of the total expenditure value, and found that all those bond expenditures represented valid bond expenditures under Measure A. So again, a clean opinion related to Measure A. Measure B. Again, I'll just kind of touch on this one real brief because it's essentially all the same layout, just different numbers, right? Related to Measure B, as you look at the balance sheet, is the fiscal year ended June 30, 2017. It was $26.8 million remaining to be spent off that first issuance. First issuance, you can see in the middle of page 4, was $27.2 million. And right above there, you can see there was $881,000 worth of expenditures related to Measure B. And then if you'll turn to the performance audit report, all of the information related to the opinions and everything is the same. If you turn to page 3, our scope, methodology, and conclusion there, again, there's $881,000 worth of expenditures in the current fiscal year. We selected a sample that represented $541,000, or 61% of the total expenditure value, and found that all those related to ballot Measure B bond expenditures. So a clean opinion on Measure B as well. Yes, sir.
Thank you. You'll be speaking to us yearly around this time, so we'll hear from you. The next time you'll have a look at these books for the bonds will be June 30th. Up until it will be after June 30th, 2018, you'll do your auditor's report and then we hear from you again. So the cycle should continue as long as we have you.
There's an annual requirement that as long as you're expending bond funds, so the bond funds you'll continue to pay out until it was 2040.
Right.
But you only have to do audits until as long as you're expending bond funds.
Right.
Other questions?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to work with the district.
So this is the action item.
Move approval.
Second.
Any comments from the public? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Thank you.
Sure. This next item this evening reflects several months of conversation that we've been having with Gateway School around a limited term use agreement with Gateway for the use of the Natural Bridges campus. And this evening, we're happy to share that we've come to agreement on terms for a limited term use agreement for the next 10 years with Gateway School. And we've finalized all of the details and are ready to present it publicly to them. That's it.
Okay. Are there comments from the board? Questions? From the public?
Good evening, trustees. My name is Paula Granger, and I'm chair of the Gateway Board of Trustees. I'm also a parent of Nate, who's a seventh grader at the school. I'm here tonight in support of the use agreement between Santa Cruz City Schools and Gateway School for the Natural Bridges site. Tonight's the culmination of a lot of hard work between the city schools, ourselves at Gateway, and I'd especially like to thank Chris Munro and her team for the very hard work that they've been putting into this. Gateway staff, faculty, parents, and other supporters are very excited about this and are delighted that Natural Bridges is going to be our new home. I'd like to thank you all for considering the use agreement tonight and ask for your vote in support of the agreement. Our head of school, Zachary Roberts, is here tonight and he'll say a few words and can answer any questions you might have. We also have a parent at the school tonight who's also a neighbour of the Natural Bridges site, and that's Kerry Waters, and she would like to make a couple of words as well. And obviously I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. So thank you again for your consideration and I urge you to support the use agreement.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Zachary Roberts. I'm the head of school at Gateway. We have three children. Autumn is 5 and in preschool. Emmy is 11 and in fifth grade at Gateway. And my 14-year-old Lila is in ninth grade at Santa Cruz High. I'm here tonight in support of the use agreement between Santa Cruz City Schools and Davis School for the Natural Resources Campus. Thank you, Chris. I especially also want to thank Pat Gaffney and Trevor Miller. This has been an enormous, thorough, collaborative process with both sides discussing this possibility for many months. I believe the agreement reflects the critical issues for both sides. I'm thrilled that we've reached this point. I'm really pleased to report that earlier today, the Gateway School Board of Trustees voted unanimously to approve the agreement and authorize me to sign on behalf of Gateway School. The extended Gateway community is excited about the opportunity to move our campus to Natural Bridges, and I know that our neighbors and our families that live near there are excited for the campus to once again echo with the happy sounds of children living and learning on the Natural Bridges campus. Thank you for your consideration tonight, and thank you, Ms. Terry Walker.
Hello, my name is Carrie Waters, and I'm here tonight to express my support for the agreement between Santa Cruz City Schools and Gateway School over the Natural Bridges location. As Zach mentioned, I am a neighbor of the school. I've owned my home on Plateau Avenue for 15 years, and I also am the CEO of a business called Bowie Labs that's located on McPherson Street near Kelly's Bakery. I'm absolutely thrilled. I'm also a parent of two boys. Dash, who's in the sixth grade at Gateway School, and Wyatt, who's in second grade there. And I'm thrilled to see this development, both for my children, for their education. I think this environment, the campus will be wonderful for them. There's a lot more space than Gateway has at their current location. But also as a neighbor, I think it'll really enhance the usability, safety of Derby Park and the entire neighborhood. So thank you very much for your hard work on this agreement. I'm very thrilled to see this move forward.
Thank you. Anyone else?
So it's our recommendation this evening that we approve the agreement with Gateway School. This really is a win-win. It meets the needs of the Gateway community. It allows us to be good neighbors in supporting a safe neighborhood for the Natural Bridges community. It helps us to preserve the school as an asset. When something is occupied, it's more easily maintained and kept up well. And it's also going to bring in revenue to support us in our continued work to provide quality public schools in Santa Cruz City Schools. So I think it's serving both of our communities, and we're pleased to bring this recommendation forward.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Do we get to say something after the motion?
Do you have another, do you have something to say?
Yeah, but I could do it after the motion as well.
Okay, well, whatever you want to do. Okay, do it. You want to make a motion?
Okay, I move that we accept. Okay, now I've got confused.
Approve
the recommendation.
I'll second.
And now, any comments?
Okay. I would like to thank Pat for your hard work on this agreement. And I would say to the Gateway people who are here, as well as to those who wrote and are not here, so pass it on, that when you're in the middle of making this kind of decision, there's so much detail and so much worry that everything is going right. You lose sight of whether everyone's going to appreciate it, you know, and you kind of cross your fingers. Our mailboxes got flooded with Gateway people this week, and that's actually great because it was kind of like the light of day coming to something that it seems like it took a long time to do, but it took a long time because it was a very careful, thoughtful process. So I appreciate you all coming tonight and having to sit through all of this. And I'm glad that we seem to be moving toward, I'm not the rest of the board yet, but we seem to be moving towards accepting this motion.
Student recommendations.
I just have a comment.
She had a comment.
Sure. I went to Gateway, graduated from Gateway, mm-hmm. grade school. I think I just wanted to say that this sounds amazing that we're going to be able to be more, or Gateway will be closer to the Santa Cruz City Schools in terms of community, I guess. And I had another point, and it was, and just added that it was kind of weird sometimes when you're attached to the church that, like, if I would point out my school, people would think it was like a Catholic school, but it's not, so I don't know. Nice to separate it a little bit.
Okay, now your recommendation, students.
Aye.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have a staff report, Tier 1 instruction, visible learning. Okay.
I'm not
working tonight.
Coming forward to you tonight, we are excited about our staff report around our instructional focus. We know that in order to impact and close the student achievement gap, it starts with a instruction. So tonight, you get to hear an update on the work we've been doing and we're going to do in the immediate future. And before you, we have our director of elementary and our director of Marianne, and our director of secondary, we have Julia.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you for inviting us tonight to talk about our district instructional focus on visible learning. I know you all had a 13-page summary, so I'm just going to assume that you read through that and that you have our board cover, so that kind of goes through some of the nuts and bolts, and we're going to try to really talk more about how we're using this as a vehicle to improve instruction in our district. So I'm going to start actually by talking about the graphic. I'm a secondary person, and I don't know if you know the difference between elementary and secondary people, but secondary people tend not to use cute little graphics and things like this, so I was very proud of myself when I put this together. But as I've had the opportunity to visit some schools that are visible learning schools and districts that are visible learning districts, they all, in some form or fashion, have this graphic up of a car and kids in the car moving along a road, and the road is kind of the visual representation of the journey that it takes when you learn a new concept. So when you're a visible learning school or district, or your teacher using visible learning practices, there are three questions that are essential for students to really know in order to make sure that they're continuing along the path of learning to the best of their ability. So the three questions are, where am I going, how am I going, and where to next? And where am I going is the first question. It really focuses on teacher clarity and teachers establishing a really clear learning intention. Learning intention and learning goal are used synonymously, and I just want to say that up front, and I'm going to say them interchangeably. I, myself, when I went through teacher school, used learning goal, so it's hard for me to switch to learning intention. But the word intention was used because we use goal for so many other things. Like, we have district goals. When students are learning, they set goals so that they can improve. So that word goal gets used so much that Hattie said that learning intention is also another way of saying learning goal, and it's more purposeful in the language. So learning intention. We're really going to focus our presentation on our district instructional focus of visible learning, which is teacher clarity. It's answering this question, where am I going?
All right. We should have practiced this.
All right, so our purpose and goals for visible learning is that really, Doug Fisher said it really well, and I'm probably going to butcher it because I don't remember things word for word, but he says that every child deserves a teacher, a good teacher by design, meaning that we know the instructional strategies that yield the best results with students, and that every student deserves a teacher that is aware of those instructional practices and that uses those regularly in their classroom to enact the most results with their students. And so really the purpose of visible learning, and John Hattie and Doug Fisher do work together, present together, is so that we are ensuring that every student has a teacher that is aware of the highest, the best strategies to use that have the highest impact on student learning, and also to provide a unified focus to our work. You know, you've seen schools when they all have a different focus. It's hard to move forward as a district in a unified way. So really, visible learning is the vehicle that we're using to help centralize our language, to help move us forward when we're talking about instruction, what best instructional practices we're using in the classroom.
All right, so the definition of visible learning, again, is really at the most basic level. Teaching occurs when teachers see learning through the eyes of the students. And again, we hear that phrase a lot, to make learning visible, make the invisible visible. A lot of what we do in schools is, it can be a mystery to children. What are we doing? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be getting out of this? So step one, teacher clarity, is basically the basic or the starting point of how do we make that visible to kids. And one of the first things we do is explain, this is what we're going to be learning today, and you'll know when you got there, when you could do this, X, Y, Z, and why it is important. Now, John Hattie is a statistician, and he synthesized more than 800 meta-analyses. I think he's up to even more than that now, as far as what are the most effective practices that we are using in schools. And he analyzed in some, you know, both that have positive effects in learning, that accelerate the pace of learning, or that are about a pace, what we expect the children to have a year's growth in your learning, or even the practices that have a negative effect on learning, that slow down children's learning. So we want to really make sure that we're grounded in research. Thank you.
Pointed
at the computer.
Thank you. Okay. All right, so like Marianne was saying, John Hattie synthesized over 800 different research studies and came up with this algorithm for assigning each instructional practice a number. And the number corresponds with what the impact is on student learning. So if you look over here, which one should I point to? Is this the one you're looking at? So if you look over here and you're looking at red, that means there's two ways of looking at this. There's the barometer of influence, and this starts with negative 0.2 over here on the left side, all the way over to 1.2. And anything zero or negative numbers are going to be have reverse effects on student learning, actually be detrimental to students' growth. Then we've got 0 to 0.18, and this is students' like growth. If there was no teacher, just learning from life experience, getting older, that's kind of the growth that you'd expect to see in a student that's not receiving any sort of like traditional education, just the impacts of getting older. Then you have influences that are 0.18 to 0.4. 0.4 is the 1 year's growth in 1 year's time. So when you look at a list of strategies, and I did give you the link to see all the different educational practices that John Hattie has assigned these numeric values to, or effect sizes, anything that's 0.4 is 1 year's growth. So anything that's more than 0.4 is going to be more than 1 year's growth in 1 year's time. Anything less than 0.4 is going to be considered not a great instructional strategy because it's not going to quite yield 1 year's growth in 1 year's time. So that's kind of that 0.4 number is a good number to keep in your mind. Then if you look down the blue, 0.4 to 0.79, 0.8 is going to be, if you're at 0.8, that's 2 years growth in 1 year's time. And then if you're at 1.2, then that's 3 years growth in 1 year's time. And when you look, you can go to the next slide. When you look at the list of instructional practices or educational practices that Hattie has research on, one of the highest ones is 1.57, which is collective teacher efficacy, the belief that teachers have the ability to impact students and change their outcomes no matter what the demographics are or what their background is. And it's not just that belief, it's their belief in working together, and really it's a lot of this has to do with our PLC work
that we do, and we had two teachers come earlier in the school year. I don't know if you remember, it was in September. We presented on our skill day, our skill PD day, and we started the year off with reading about collective teacher efficacy and visible learning, and how, as skill leaders or instructional teacher leaders or teachers, have a great impact on their departments that they're working with, and how to effectively yield the best results when working in a team of educators. So collective teacher efficacy is something that isn't our instructional focus in the classroom, but it's definitely something that we're weaving into as much as we can throughout the school year, and we'll continue to do so. You see response to intervention up here. I know we're trying to use the RTI model in our schools to make sure that we're meeting the needs of all students, and that has a 1.07 effect size. Remember, 0.8 is 2 years' growth in 1 year's time. 1.2 is 3 years' growth in 1 year's time. So our students who are in those Tier 2 and Tier 3 interventions often need to make 2 years' growth in 1 year's time or 3 years' growth in 1 year's time. So if you have an effective RTI model, John Hattie says when schools have that, those students are making that more than 2 years' growth in 1 year's time, which is what they need in order to get caught back up to where they're at grade level. We've got teacher clarity coming in at 0.75. So that's almost 2 years' growth in 1 year's time. And you might think, like, well, why start with teacher clarity as an instructional focus when there's other instructional practices that might yield a greater impact? And really, when it came down to talking with Frank, talking with other principals, and Marianne and myself, really what the research shows, when you read a visible learning book, they all start with teacher clarity. You have to be clear on what you're teaching, on your roadmap, and what your expectations are with students in regards to learning before you can embark on looking at feedback or peer and self-assessment. If you're not clear on what kids are learning, then you can't build upon that. So really, we wanted to start there because we see that as really foundational work in order to move on to other practices.
And if I could say something, again, with teacher clarity, when we talk about learning goals, it's beyond putting the standard on the wall and saying, I'm teaching this now. This is really putting it into child-friendly language and making it explicit to kids. Like, this is what we're doing. And you're going to know when you got there when you can do X, Y, Z, and I'm going to help you get there. That's very reassuring to children, and it's very important as well. So it sounds like, you know, learning goals, learning intentions, it sounds very academic language. But really, our goal is to put both the learning intention and the what we refer to as success criteria in kid-friendly language. I can do this now. I'm a successful, and now I know my next step is, some, you know, the next step. And again, you can just, we just put the other strategies up there so you can peruse. And again, some things are quite surprising with the effect size. And again, this is a meta-analysis of many studies. And of course, any of these things is how you do it as well. So it's not saying that, but when you aggregate all the data, this is what he found with the effect size.
Yeah, and I don't know if you noticed homework is up there, and some of those other ones, they're intentional. Everyone likes to complain about homework, or I should say students like to complain about homework. Even parents, I'm a parent of an 8-year-old child, and it's so hard to get her to sit down and just do her what should be 20 minutes of homework in 20 minutes instead of taking like an hour or 2 hours. So I know it can be really difficult for kids to focus after school and get that homework done no matter what age they are. And homework here, I just want to point out, it's 0.29 overall, but Hattie actually digs deeper into homework. If you read his big study, he talks about homework at elementary and what the impact is, and it's actually, it's around, I want to say 0.13 or 0.15, it's less than 0.23. For middle school, it's right around 0.23 or 0.29. And then for high school, it's in the threes. It's like 0.3 something, 0.37 or something. I should have brought the exact. So it's different at different levels. And he also goes into different subject content area and talks about different homework. And there's different effect size for different subject area. Math has a much higher effect size than other content areas. So that's something you're interested in learning more. There is more research. It's not just as simple as, well, homework has a 0.29 effect size. And we have summer school up there. And ability grouping is when you have everyone in the same level in a group together.
So it's really interesting, something I want to learn more about. Okay, so teacher clarity is our instructional focus this year. As a principal team, we co-created the definition for teacher clarity, and you have it here. There's a lot of different components to teacher clarity. It's not just as simple as putting your learning goal or learning intention up on your whiteboard. It's actually actively using it throughout your lesson, making sure that students know what the connection is to their life and the world around them. It's more than just what are they learning. It's also when are they going to know that they've met that learning goal. So that's the success criteria, and that's so important. Because a student might be able to say, I'm learning about exponents today. Well, do you know, like, what can you tell me about exponents? Have you met the learning goal? It's like, I'm not sure. So that success criteria is really important because that helps tell the child, like, where are they in the learning progression? Can you do this? Can you do X, Y, and Z? Can you define it? Can you use it in a problem? So we've got the four different components down here at the bottom. It says, in classrooms, teacher clarity exists when students are able to. And then we, as a leadership team, our principal leadership team, have been going into different schools and looking at teacher clarity in the classroom. And we've been doing this for a few reasons. One, we're trying to just take like a pulse on where are we as a district with implementing teacher clarity into schools. And two, how effective is it? Is it having the effect that John Hattie's 0.79 effect size says we should be having? Are students really saying that it's impactful? So when we go into classrooms, we ask kids, what's the learning goal? We ask them, have you met the learning goal yet? Do you know where you are in meeting the learning goal? And then we also ask them, why is this important? Like, what's the relevance to your learning? And let's see, we asked also about what are your next steps? And we have a form that we also co-created as a leadership team, and we've been going through and collecting kids' answers, and then at the end of these administrator walkthroughs, we get back together, and we discuss what we found. And it's not to, like, shame or highlight or anything like that. It's mostly for our own PD, and to help principals know, like, what is effective? How did you get all these teachers to do that? Or, oh, something I noticed in classrooms is this, and that can be their next step with their own staff for professional development. And also, it's great for elementary principals to be at high school and see what's expected at high school and vice versa. So we're having all principals from all levels go to the different grade spans and visit the sites, just not only for teacher clarity, but to get them on the campus and get them used to, like, what does it feel like? What are the expectations? What are kids doing, especially in regards to teacher clarity?
And again, it's all very student-friendly, and, like, you know, instead of asking what is the learning goal, instead of you say, what are you learning today? What are you learning? And they'll be able to answer, and they're really excited to talk about it. It's really been gratifying. We've been to Harvard, and we've been to grades of 40 middle school. And it's been wonderful. The children have been very excited and happy to share what they're learning. It's really been powerful.
Yes, David Norman, poor teacher at Grants 40 Middle School, he has some very eager students in there that want to tell you how teacher clarity has impacted their learning. They're very supportive of learning goals, and they say it's really helped them. Quite cute. They're sixth graders. So if you ever have a chance to be in classrooms and actually interact with students and ask them, like, what are you learning? And I like to say, like, do you think it's helpful when you know what you learn? Like, I'm trying to do my own research on, like, how effective is teacher clarity? Do kids see a difference? And, I mean, middle schoolers, sixth graders will tell you, yeah, this has been really helpful, and they'll tell you why and what they need to do in their poems to make them better. All right, and then we just have, again, the barometer, which shows where teacher clarity kind of falls on this effect size barometer. And it is one of the high-impact instructional practices in a classroom.
and really visible learning. They're instructional practices, so some of them aren't like instructional strategies that you can take and do in your class. Some of them are just like systematic school things that you can do as a school or as a district. So it's really quite engaging work. As someone who like loves reading about instruction and loves instruction and is passionate about it, some of the most invigorating research I've read, and it's a lot of fun to work with teachers and students and principals on.
And another high impact strategy is feedback, and it's really been great to work with colleagues, work with principals, and give each other feedback and what's happening. It's just as important to us. Another thing is in our own work, in our meetings, in our professional development, all this, we are also very explicit with the learning goal. We're going to be doing this today, and by the end of the day, we'll be able to do X, Y, Z. Again, clarifying it, we're all practicing it, we're all getting better at it, we all have a lot to learn about it, but we believe in it, and we believe it's important to model that, to use it to walk the walk, not just talk the talk on that. And I would like to go back to Julie's beautiful
backup.
Graphic, so that we're
good. Well, thank you. It was a very informative and fascinating report. Do we have any questions? Dee.
Thank you so much for presenting this. I'm a bit of a data nerd, so I get really jazzed up about this stuff. And I have some questions just about the meta-analysis study, because I haven't looked at it, I have to confess. And what triggered it is you talked about the variations in effect size across the different grade levels for homework. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, for teacher clarity, did Hattie also find variations in the effect size across grade levels?
So in John's Hattie meta-analysis, I think some of the studies he goes back to are even all the way to the 70s, 80s. So he goes back far when he's looking at all these educational practices. And homework is something that's been researched and written about a lot, I think because it's a hotly debated topic. And I worked in a school district that banished all homework for middle and high school. And that's kind of like a revolutionary idea that people were like, doesn't matter. It's just busy work. It's not really impacting kids' learning. So I think because homework has so much research, he was able to dig deeper into it. There are other things that don't have as much research in them, so I think that's why homework he dug into more, because there's more to dig into. Teacher clarity. There's research on like learning goals and success criteria, and I myself have not read through all the different studies he read through, but I know it's like the basis of any like instructional program. Like when you're going to teaching school to get your credential, like you start with teacher clarity.
Maybe can I follow up?
Sure,
the reason I'm asking it is because to me teacher clarity is partially about the teachers being very transparent about what they're doing and why they're doing it, but it's also about, from the student's perspective, getting them to reflect on their own learning.
Yeah.
And to kind of gauge where they are, which is metacognitive skills.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that younger children, especially in elementary school, they're still working on that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, middle school and high school, hopefully they've got that down. So that's why I was asking.
There's some great videos of kindergartners who are doing this very thing, talking about where they are, goal setting, having thoughts about, like, where are they falling in this learning progression? And so there's some really tangible strategies for teaching kids to reflect. One of the ones for younger elementary is having teachers have like the different stages, like 1 through 10 of the learning progression. What does it look like when you're a 1? What does it look like when you're a 2? And so the kid, if you're writing, say, a sentence, and you have a learning progression for what quality, like, sentences, and you start here with like it's not punctuated, doesn't have capitals, it maybe only has misspellings, it, and then you go all the way to 10 where it has adjectives, it has a conjunction, I don't know. So you kind of have that whole span of
what does it look like to have a sentence? And then kids, really, you talk about it with kids, and you have them self-reflect, you have them work in partnerships, and then you have them go to, okay, where are they? And they actually, like, physically will put their little car, like, where they are, and then they're on that road of that learning progression of, okay, so I'm here. Do our schools have that in place yet? I don't know. I haven't seen any elementary schools that are quite there yet, but there is work out there to support doing that with teachers.
So there's exciting possibilities for mm-hmm.
I've seen it in a kindergarten class.
Yeah, I want to add that we worked with a consultant a couple of years ago, Paul Bloomberg, and he really starts with teacher clarity. And again, the ultimate is metacognition, where you are. We want to create independent learners who know where they're going and where they are. Where they're going and when they got there. And probably the most amazing example I saw was in our kindergarten class, Kathy Shabu's class, and the kindergartners at maybe a couple of years, we had all the different stages, like Julie just described, from, you know, scribbles to letters to words with spaces to sentences. So you saw the whole progression of kindergarten writing. And you can put up there first grade writing as well, so kids can really, you know, find where they fit on that. And they could compare their paper to the samples. And we had this little special needs child at our school, and it was just amazing because she would just go and she would look at that, and then she'd go back to her desk and she'd do it. And then she'd come back and she'd be the next color. We called it rainbow writing. So the colors of the rainbow as they went, as they progressed. And it was just to see the fire in her. Helene knows who I'm talking about. It was just amazing. It was so clear to her. Once you made it clear that this is where I'm going, this is what I'm learning, she just did it, and it was really pretty neat.
It's also important to note that Patty's work is because I grew up with some of our work with Carol Dreck out of Stanford, whereby when students have an opportunity to have learning goals, they become motivated, inspired, and focused. Mm-hmm. And that's important to note. And that the teacher clarity is not done in isolation. It's done in conjunction with a system and a process. And so although it's teacher clarity, it's just not teacher clarity. We also have what we call teacher collective efficacy, and it all starts with data. Where are we? Where do we want to go? And how do we get there? Let's come up collaboratively with a plan, time to have pause to reflect, and adjust based on feedback. So I just want to put that out there as well.
I was just going to say that I think it's really cool what everything you guys are doing, because I work at a Boys and Girls Club and we do homework hours, so it's like I see them like as they like learn new like things like in math and stuff, so I have to help them with their homework, and it's like the math's changed like a lot from when I was in elementary. So it's like you can see like where they're like growing, because I'll work with like the first graders and then they'll get help from like the second graders, and they're like they'll tell us how their teachers are like working together, and we'll switch classes so they like get that like filling in, and it's like it's in the live oak area, but it's like then you go upstairs to the teen center, and it's the same way with the middle schoolers, and then it's just like I just think it's really cool how you guys have like the goals going on for them. It's like I feel like it's really helpful.
Do you see it? You're at Harbor, right?
Yeah.
Do you see it? I think I actually went to your classroom when we were visiting Harbor doing walkthroughs.
You might have.
Art class, like sculpting.
Yeah, I was in service.
So do you feel like it is helpful? Do you notice your teachers using learning goals?
Yeah. I feel like when you set a goal for something, it's like more motivating to be like, yeah, if I get there, then I know that I'll know it. And then the teachers are like helping you through it, like step by step. That's like, I feel like that's more helpful because going home, for like the little kids, when I see them like come here and they're like kind of struggling, and it's like they have their peers help them, like, oh, in class, we did it like this, and then they'll be like, or the teacher will tell them, oh, circle if you don't have you don't know the answer, and we'll go over it in class together, which I find really helpful, because then they come back and like they're like, oh, this is how you do it, because it's like I'm not bad at math, but their math like really like different, so I'll just be like, oh, okay, so that's how you do it, so now I know for next time, so I can help you on your next assignment, and it's like the teachers will also tell all the staff at the Boys and Girls Club how to do it, and they'll give us packets, and so we stay connected with them, so it's pretty helpful.
Well, you bring up a really good point. Yeah. Part of visible learning is about just the learning itself,
yeah,
and not penalizing people for not being all the way over at a 10 yet. It's about the learning process, and when we make mistakes, that's when we grow the most.
Yeah.
So it really values that, which is helping kids to feel more safe in classrooms, to feel more safe to try, and it's okay to make mistakes. It's actually a good thing, and it's celebrated.
Yeah, I find it, really amazing how, much the kids, have grown just in, the past couple weeks doing their homework, and I feel like it's because, they have the goals set for themselves, because in class they'll have, oh, you have to reach this goal by this time, and, it'll be the same for reading and English, and, you get, it's kind of like a prize for yourself, but, yeah, I feel like it's really good for them.
Sheila, you're next.
Yeah, I actually have two questions, but I'll ask one at a time. By the way, I think your graphic is really great.
I tried.
You missed your calling. As you were talking, I was thinking, and you brought it up near the end, but I was thinking about my daughter, who's volunteering now in the district, telling me about a young student who has a certain subject was being explained, and the students were working together on it. This student has learning problems that at second grade haven't really been totally defined yet, and she was talking about the panic in his face and the feeling that he didn't belong, I think was the way she thought about it. And so I was thinking about it while you were talking, how is that, okay, there is the, I understand the idea of they follow their own learning process, and that allows them to see, which is kind of like what she did with this kid, was help him to follow his own learning process. But how does one deal with making sure you notice those students and making sure that they aren't feeling that somehow they're not with the rest?
Well, I can speak to that a little bit again in that example that I gave earlier in our kindergartens. What I loved seeing that, and we did it through the grades, but having that learning visible offered so many entry points for kids. I didn't have to be average first grader or average second grader or high or low or whatever. There's the whole spectrum of learning. So no matter where they enter that point of entry, okay, I'm going to start here, and this is the next step, and then this is the next step. And it was very empowering to the students to know that it doesn't matter if you're here or here or here, there's always a next step. So I think that speaks to this graphic. Where am I going? Mm-hmm. How am I getting there, and where to next? Mm-hmm. And how are you going to help me get there? So we felt it really did help kids because, where do you start when the child moves way off of either end? In typical, we tend to teach to the middle. Well, how do we offer those multiple entry points so that they can, get that on that rung on that ladder and then know where the next step is? So I found it very much. And again, we were researching all kinds of things as well. But one of the things that I think that we are exploring in our special development is universal compassion learning, which is exactly that. How do we teach to all the edges of where children are, not just this average lesson delivery? So we hope to do more learning about that in the near future.
I know that standards-based rating is something that a lot of districts and schools move towards when they start implementing visible learning and valuing that learning process so that you can value growth. And so I know Mission Hill was looking into it. Now I'm not the principal anymore, so I don't know where they are still in that. But I know Harbor High, at the beginning of the year, I met with teachers who are interested in learning more about standards-based rating and what that looks like versus traditional grading. And really, traditional grading, if you have a 40% and you raise it to a 50%, you still have an F. And that feels really bad as a student. And it's like, I did all that work, and I still have an F. In secondary, it is difficult when you're traditional, base grades, that you don't really see that growth in your grade that you might want to see. I know at Mission Hill, in our reading intervention, I know this is true for other reading interventions, we had Read 180, and students would come in, would be in that class because there were two grade levels or below where they needed to be with reading, and students would come in, say, with a second or third grade reading level as a seventh grader and need to try to get caught up as quickly as possible, And so they would chart their growth, and that was something, it wasn't, a, that class didn't get a grade. It was based on, like, your growth and your ability to work through the different reading selections, and it was a pass-fail, but the way they charted their growth really helped empower students feel like, hey, I am growing. I might still be at, like, a fourth or fifth grade reading level, but I went from second to a fifth grade reading level, so now, as a seventh grader, I can actually start accessing some of my texts that are in my classes. But that's a huge, I mean, that's been a question that's been around in education for longer than any of us have been around. How do you make people feel included when they feel like I'm different, I don't learn the same way, and that's something we're always working to strive towards, making kids feel included in our classrooms. But I think this learning tracker way of thinking about learning does value all learners.
I'll defer to Jeremy and Patty because they haven't asked a question yet.
And Cindy was next.
Cindy, yeah, they can go first.
I was curious to have you address, at least briefly, the bridge to assessment. We look at instructional practices and learning intention and teacher passion and teacher effectiveness and teacher adaptiveness. Where's the bridge to classroom assessment and then also standardized assessment, because it just feels like sometimes there's a disconnect, because when you visit classrooms and you look at student achievement within the classroom, you look at grades or you look at graduation rates, everything looks rosy. And then when you look at assessments, there seems to be a disconnect. I may be way off, but I just wanted you to address that.
Sure, we take a stab at it. You know, when you write your learning intentions or your learning goals, you're really writing them on the standard as well. You are taking the standard and breaking it down into student-sized chunks and in student-friendly language. So you are teaching to the standards, and again, that will be reflected in the assessment like that. But there's a whole middle piece to visible learning, though. And that student self-assessment as well. I mean, we really want to empower children to know where they are and be able to self-assess. Where do I, how am I doing on this? And so that, and if you're teaching on the standards, that will get them there. I think that a lot of times the word assessment, we have to use, there's lots of different kinds of assessments that we give in schools, and there's lots of different purposes for it. The summative assessment at the end of the time is just a snapshot of where we are. We have to, every step of the way, get children comfortable with assessment, and then teachers using formative assessment to understand how children are thinking about a certain thing, about a math problem or about a whatever, and giving them opportunities to, assessment, like when we're talking about formative assessment, let's take math for example. You give them a problem set. And children need a chance to, either the mathematics as well as other subjects, they need to be able to take the assessment, get feedback on the assessment, and improve their work. Edit it, try it again. And again, like Carol Dweck refers to as Frank just pointed out, mistakes are good. You learn more from your mistakes than anything else. So I think that, I'm not being entirely clear, but teacher clarity, are we clear with the learning intentions? Do we have the success criteria when we get there? Are we giving children feedback? I mean, assessment is feedback, and the formative assessment that we use in the classroom is the opportunity to give kids feedback on their learning. Ultimately, all those things will lead to different outcomes on these big, high-stakes, end-of-term-type tests that we read about in the newspaper.
But it's also important to note that everything starts with data, and so one of the things we grappled with last year is trying to adopt a standard-based assessment system, common assessment system, where we have maps, where we have a pre-assessment when kids arrive, and then a mid-year assessment to see what kind of progress we're making, and then what kind of adjustments we need to make, and then a post-assessment to see what kind of growth they made over time, and how we use that information to adjust our focus and our instruction so that we have the adequate feedback to make good, solid decisions about an informed instructional practice and adjustment and focus area. So I think it's important to know that big hole that we had in terms of not having common standard line assessment, we have them now in this infancy stage. So that's important. Coupled with the teacher ongoing formative assessment as well.
Yeah, I see teacher clarity as our first step. And I think we do have a lot of work to do around assessment and what when do we assess, what type of assessments do we use. We haven't, I don't, to my knowledge as a district, dug into even performance tasks, how those are created in our CASP system, like what those look like. We've done some work at middle school with core teachers, and we've developed our own writing assessments that are performance tasks. But really, the new CASP assessments are asking our students to do so much, and I don't know, I have not gone through and met with teachers yet to see, like, what did their assessments look like? How did those mirror or reflect what students are being asked to do on the CASP?
Right.
And really, it's not about teaching to the test or creating assessments that look like the test. The tests, actually, they're great assessments. Like, as a nerd who likes assessments and data and that sort of thing, like, I read through those tests, I'm like, yes, this would definitely tell you if a student knows how to read, or yes, this would definitely tell you if a student knows how to write. They can read this, write a response, synthesize the material. So I think the tests are good measures, and they ask our students to do a lot, and I think we have a lot of room for, we have a lot of room for growth in our instructional practice, and that includes assessment.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Danielle.
I have a question, so I think similar to Sheila's, but I guess I'm wondering if it's feasible or even like worth looking into somewhere pretty far down the line, changing language and changing like the traditional grading system from using A through F and using the language like failing, because I think that is problematic. And I don't know, like, how you could define where a student is in terms of learning and then have that translate to something that is measurable, but if that's something that can happen.
Yeah,
that's really hard, because at the high school level we have certain requirements where schools who even have gone standards-based high schools, they still have to end up giving you a grade, because that's just how Ed Code is set up and how school systems are set up. So you still, in the end, are going to get a grade for your school. Our state's not there yet. But I do think as we're kind of shifting in our thoughts about instruction and in learning, that that's probably something that's going to be discussed eventually. Because there's a big push for going towards standards-based grading. And I don't know if you've experienced this with your own children or you've seen it in kids before, where they go from elementary school and they really enjoy learning, and then something happens when they start receiving those letter grades where it's about the grade, and it's not about the learning anymore. Oh, I need an A in this. And it, like, kids start cheating, they feel all this pressure, it's about that end grade, and it's not, it's hard to be like, hey, we're learning how to write. We're writers in this classroom. We're not so concerned about that letter grade, but it's easy for me to say as the teacher, and the student feels the pressure of their parents or feels the pressure of, like, getting that grade so they can go into the AP class, or getting that grade so that they can be considered to get into Berkeley, or whatever their end desires are. But our society does place a lot of emphasis on that end grade. That's how we value you. And we're trying to say, no, 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 we value the learning process, but yes, you still get that end grade. So it feels contradictory. And yeah, there's no easy answer for high school. We have to give letter grades in high school.
We still have a lot of questions, and I think everyone whose light's on has had at least one question. We have several more reports. Is it okay to maybe talk later? It's been fascinating, and you guys are doing a great job of articulating what's happening and how it's working. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I just want to put a plug in too. We have that RTI Impact Fair coming up on the 2nd of February that you're all invited to come to, and we're going to be talking more about data and that sort of thing. So I hope you can join us.
Thank you.
And I definitely have a question I'd like to talk to somebody about later.
Okay. So. I love talking about this.
Win-win. Okay, our next report is the Personnel Commission update.
Good evening. So I want to introduce Kinnae Hauser, who's our classified personnel director. Kinnae is doing two things tonight. Our learning outcomes are to update the board on our classification study, which is the newer been working on, and also to do her annual report, which is a requirement. So instead of making her come back and giving me that, we could move the two together here. So I will welcome Pene.
Thank you. And, am I on? Good enough, yeah. It's my brain. Thank you for that that presentation, Marianne and Julia. That was really great. As a former teacher and as a parent, my brain was going to all these different places, and so let me arrive back as director of classified stuff and think about this, because I was really engaged and wanting to comment and chat about it as well. My light would have been on. So, yes, I'm the director of classified personnel. This is my third year. I've been with the district for 13 or 14 years, and I'm loving this role as classified director. People say, do you miss teaching? Do you miss the kids? And I do miss the kids. I miss teaching, and I love the grown-ups. And I love the other people that contribute to these schools and what goes into getting them into the district. And when we hire new people, it's a celebration. And today we were, yes, we got there. And people walk out of interviews. And so it's really a fun place. It's a fun place to be. As far as our team that we have, it's a small little department. We partner with HR. We're in the same area as human resources. But the whole department is myself and an assistant. I have a new assistant this year. Her name's Denise Grogan. She started about 2 months ago, and she's another fantastic hire. My old assistant was there for about 8 months, and then Molly snatched him up, and he continues to be fantastic. So people are kind of looking at us saying, how do you do this? How'd you get these good ones? And I really do trust the process. We have three chairs that are somewhat volunteers, and they were not able to come tonight. One of them is new. Her name's Pam Hernandez. She was a teacher for many years, and this is her first year as a chair. So she's learning about the personnel commission and about what we do. Just to remind you / educate you, as a personnel commission, our charge is to make sure that we are hiring the most competent, the most qualified people that we can, that the hiring practices is fair, that it's open to all people, and that we're getting the best people, and that we are retaining the best people. We're also required to maintain order and a structure within the classified unit, with all of classified employees, so that the hierarchy is in line, that it can get over time, it can kind of get wiggly, wobbly when you add a job in here and add it in there, and where's this going to go on the salary schedule? And so our charge is to make sure that this stays in line, that all of it's organized in a very neat fashion. And you see, that kind of goes to, I'm getting ahead of myself, so let me just stop there. The next slide. Here's the annual report. These are just the numbers of how many people, how many new hires we've had from July through January last year this time and this year this time. It looks like we're about on course for now. As far as promotions go, this is something that I know the union is interested in, the commission is very interested in. How many people are we keeping and they are able to promote from within, that we're building qualified employees as we go. So that number has increased. As far as additional FTE, this is, someone was asking me about this slide earlier today. This means if someone, they might be a food service employee, and at 3 hours, their average is 3 hours a day, and someone, a 6 hour a day employee, promotes to a different job, then that person, instead of it being called a promotion, it's an additional FTE, so they get a job that has more hours. There have been some jobs with increased funding, increased needs through LCFF, is that right, Molly? Where the funding comes from, within special ed, for example, more staffing for the site at Bayview, what's that program called?
Well, it's, we added some PBIS.
PBS, staff, IT PBS positions. Mm-hmm. So those are the numbers there. Thank you. Are you doing it?
Yeah,
who's behind the curtain? Burton. Thank you. And that takes us to the classification study. This has been the big work of the commission this year. So as I was talking about before, our charge is to make sure that these jobs are up to date, the job descriptions are up to date, that they are organized in a fashion that makes sense, that's fair. The study hadn't been done for about 20 years, and most districts do it about every 8 years is when most districts have a new study. So we were overdue, and it's hard. People are resistant and a little nervous about, the district is nervous, we are nervous here, the employees are nervous, what's this going to mean, and they're excited at the same time. So we hired a Ewing to do this study for us, and in February, about 50% came to an orientation. And I thought that was fantastic. The consultant said, that's about right. About 50% is about right. How many to get them to that orientation. Then the next step was a survey, a written survey, and that's how you participate in the study. And we got about 65% participation in that. The next step was Ewing, which is the consultants. They came to interview either in groups or one-on-one with employees. Employees could request that. They could say, you know what, here's a minimal, I'll write these things on the questionnaire, but I really want to talk to someone about my job. I really want them to get what I do. And so they had all those interviews, and 100% that requested it, they got an interview. Then came the review of the job descriptions, and this was a lot of back and forth. So Ewing sent out, okay, here's our draft. And then all the employees got the drafts, all the supervisors got the drafts. They all sent back their feedback. And they said, I don't think so, take this in, take this out, I don't like this title. Ewing took all of their comments into consideration and then sent back the next revision. So we sent that out, and at some point this has to stop, right? So we go back and forth. And this last round we got about 3 or 4 responses. And now Molly and I, along with the commission and the union and the directors, supervisors, have been going through just doing the fine-tuning of these job descriptions. One thing that we're looking at is really making sure that we aren't screening people out by the prerequisites. So if a job says it requires a college degree or it requires 5 years experience in grounds, is that necessary? Are we screening people out? We don't have huge pools of applicants. We don't have hundreds and hundreds of applicants. There's a shortage of employees. And so we want to make sure that our doors are open and that we're inviting people to come in and test and qualify and interview and get those qualified people in. Next steps. We want to create a process for maintaining these job descriptions. We don't want to wait 20 years again. We want to, so that's going to be something that Molly and I and the commission will work together on to make sure that it's written into the rules. How often do we do this? How do we keep, maybe not do all of the jobs at once, but every 5 years look at certain families, they call them, certain groups of jobs. Very soon we will be bringing all the job descriptions to the personnel commission and to the board for approval. And it will have gone through a lot of processes. And then we will review the compensation study. Another piece of this study is how are we as far as compensation goes? Looking at the districts that we compare with, where do we fall in the average? Do we pay above market? Are we below market? And for which job? So how do we get closer to being where we want to be competitive and get the best employees possible? It will be negotiated. Salaries will be negotiated, but that's another step. Ewing, the consultants, are coming to give a presentation. I think it'll be about a half-hour presentation on February 6th. It's a Tuesday at our regular personnel commission meeting. We are going to have this first order of business and then do everything else afterwards. We've changed the sequence already, and everyone is welcome to come, so we'd love to see you there. And that's all.
Questions? Go ahead, Susan.
Okay. Just a quick question. You referenced comparing the compensation to other districts. What districts do you look at?
There are 11 districts that we're looking at. I don't have a list on me. I know some of them are the neighboring districts. Pajaro is one of them. And then like districts, like San Luis Obispo.
San Luis Coastal
is one of them. Salinas, I believe, is one of them. So and that's been negotiated as far as which districts discussed mm-hmm. and agree upon about which districts do we compare with Scotts Valley, I believe, and different things that are taken into consideration. And we worked with Chris to say, this is what we use on state reports. This is what are like districts.
Thank you.
As far as funding goes, yeah.
Dee Dee?
When you look at how our salaries compare to other districts, is cost of living in these regions also taken into consideration? Because it's expensive to live anywhere in California, but there are certain districts where it's more affordable.
Yes, that is something that they don't take it as much into consideration as we would think. And they say what the consultants have said is that they work throughout all of California and on the West area, they say everywhere they go, that's discussed. San Diego's discussed everywhere they go, cost of living. One thing that I tell them, well, with employees, as far as our funding, is our funding taking into consideration, maybe you can help me here, Chris, is the funding taking into consideration cost of living? Mm-hmm. And so they're hoping that works itself out, but it sort of depends on it's a challenge. It's really a hard one.
Sheila, you're next.
Just a comment on that. I just read a study where we're the fourth most expensive place. I'm not sure if it's the world or the United States, but I think it was the world, which. The next time they say it's happening everywhere, I say, yeah, but we're the fourth most expensive place in the world.
I wonder about that, and I find myself in that role of talking to people about this and hearing about it, and I don't know how, I feel like I'm kind of in the middle. How can we pay?
Right. I think it's just a matter of keeping saying it until people hear it and start to think in terms of solutions, because I don't know the answer either. I'm not suggesting you do.
But we do have conversations, and I think that I found it effective in working with employees, prospective employees, when I'm having the conversation of, do you want to take this job, or will you please take this job, and we'd love to have you, and them thinking about it. Really, we want it to be a place that we want it to work for them. Mm-hmm. We want it to fit with their lifestyle. We want it to be something that they can manage for it to work, and so finding those employees that it can work for.
Right. And that the actual thing I wanted to say was I'm really delighted to hear that you're talking about how to make the prerequisites not so onerous mm-hmm. that we're missing people who might be good.
Yeah.
Because we don't always have the exact answer as to what makes somebody good there. So I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah, it's been a really nice effort with the union and with Molly. It's been really, we're really on that same, going in that direction.
Yeah.
Patty?
I just wanted to comment that I'm appreciative that you are building in the process for maintaining the job descriptions so that we don't have another 20 years, depending on the funding and governors. And I think that will help you now, because the job descriptions, and I think the working class will help us understand what the job entails. So often we sit here making policy and never have done a job. So by keeping up on this, I'm hoping that we can attract more. I think that'll be part of the attraction. I know that we always go to the bottom line of pay, but a lot of it is the quality of a person feeling valued for the work they do, and they feel valued when they believe that you understand the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much. This is a report, no action required. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. See you on the 6th.
How are we doing? About a short break, or are we doing okay? Break? Okay. Well, I think there are several that want to break, so we're going to do a 5-minute.
Doors are open.
Our next item is new business leaseback agreement.
So I'm going to help Pat save his voice this evening, and I'm going to introduce Trevor to speak about this leaseback agreement for Bayview and De La Viega Elementary Schools for the bond projects at those campuses. So Trevor, can you come and speak to this?
Good evening, everybody. Well, I'm happy to be here again tonight with the promise of another wonderful contract department. You may ask why we put Bayview and Bellevue together. Everything else has been sort of based on site or based on an item. And this came about through a long discussion with the architect and actually some discussions with a few of the interested contractor parties that pointed out some geographic alignment, the possibility of some economies of scale with employees and overhead, and the fact that both the elementary schools have similar programs. Building structures are quite different, but that combination of things really will help us leverage to get the best value out of every dollar we get to spend. So that was sort of the first decision process. As we go through this lease-leaseback interview process, there's a whole series of qualifications, and I know I've kind of gone over it before, but it's sort of a refresher. We have a software program that's operated by a third-party consultant group called Quality Bidders. The contractors all have to pre-qualify through that. It's actually state law for anything over $1 million. So we have all our contractors and all our mechanical type contractors qualify through that. They get a score based on their financials, their safety records, their performance bonds and stuff, whatever, if there's any black marks, it all records in this. So there's a score they get at the end. So that's part of, one, they qualify, but do they qualify well enough to score enough points to be worthy to work for us? So the second part is with the RFQ/P, the Q part being a qualification packet. Some of the similarities in the original qualification, but a lot of it has specifically to do with what are you going to do for us? You know, it's all about us. We're looking for people that are going to make our team the best. And so what we're looking for from them is not just a resume of I did this and I did this and I did this, is not only did we do this, but we accomplished all these other things above and beyond what the original scope was. And oh, by the way, looking at your stuff, here's some ideas we have. And sometimes we don't get a lot of new input. In this particular instance, we got a lot of new input. And it was kind of eye-opening, because these two projects in particular are two of the ones we started early and have gotten quite a ways down the path with some pretty solid ideas about what we want it to look like in the end. It's just figuring out how to put those pieces together in a fashion that makes sense, both from a plant standpoint for the kids and the students and the parents and the teachers and sort of that community, but also from a how do we do it, how do we build it. We can design it all day long and we can sit back having done this 100 times saying we think this is the best way to do it, but the only true test is when the guy that actually comes up with the bags and the nails says, no, this is the way you need to do it because it'll be cheaper, faster, better, any number of those adjectives and descriptors. So in this process, we again had a pretty solid pool, four rose to the top and qualified to get an interview. Of those four, one pulled out at the last minute because they received another very large contract and basically said, thank you, we'd love to work for you. However, our resources are such right now based on this that we don't think we could perform the best. So I thought that was very honorable of them. So it was down to three. And of the three that we interviewed, two in particular were really spot on with a lot of what they did. But one stood out above them all with what I started at the beginning, that focus on what they could do for us. And I don't know how many hours this team must have put together, because they put a presentation that wowed the whole panel. This time there was four of us. We had Jared Bogart, who's a local contractor in the area, very reputable and knowledgeable. We had my alike position from SoCal Elementary District, Jim Dupree. We had the architect that's going to be stamping the plans, and myself. And it was an exciting day. Because we didn't have too many interviews, it was also a little relaxing, but it was exciting to get some information. So with that, Flint Construction is represented here tonight. I don't know if anyone wants to say anything, but I'm really excited with what they brought to the table, and I can hardly wait to get started on this project. And that, I've been rambling, so ask some questions.
So I'm pleased to see that Jared Bogart was a member of the panel. Is that something that volunteer position or paying Bogart Construction?
Yeah, I'm paying.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the second one. So this one. I'll say we'll probably be on the next couple as well. Good. As long as I can get him over.
Okay, any other questions?
My light keeps coming out.
Oh,
it goes off. No, there it goes. It goes off the.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Trevor, and thank you for talking us through the process. Can you tell me what it was that Flint Builders had brought above and beyond that allowed their scoring to be that much further and for you to talk?
Specifically in the interview process, they spent a lot of time studying the physical aspects of the site. So they've used relatively simple from that aspect. There's a main driveway. You can come in. You can set the trailers up here. You can start to operate. They also took another approach in addition to that, which we'd never thought of, and that's coming from Palm Street. So one of the things we talked about is doing kind of a running track around the thing for the PE and stuff. It's one of the things the site really wants. Well, by creating that access, it also puts the first leg of that path in. But it allows us to work in a part of the campus without having to cross the campus. So from a safety plan, when they put their safety plan aspect into place, and we saw that, I mean, that was something, again, we hadn't thought of. So that was interesting. What we thought was a simple site, baby booking information. WBA is a bit of another animal. It sets down in one part. There's that hillside that wraps around it. We're talking about putting a new building in there so we can get rid of the modulars. That's one of the first things we need to do so we can create our own swing space. We had some ideas about how that would be done. They come up with new ideas about how to utilize the new parking lot as a staging area to crane things in rather than having trucks trying to drop them down in onto the site. The logistics of how they put the phasing together also was really intriguing. And I think they've got some really good ideas that are going to make it maybe not change the end result, other than the process will be smoother and gentler on the folks that have to live there. They put a lot of thought into not disrupting the normal educational process, even though there's a bit of a reality check there, but it was really impressive to look at the way they thought that through from the teacher and the child's perspective and what their operators do and don't do. I think those were kind of the highlights of that.
That's great. Thank you.
Didi?
Just one thing you said that triggered me. It sounds like you said that they were also being mindful of the impact that their work could potentially have on the surrounding neighborhood. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole package of getting equipment on and off the site. Those roads can be congested, that they're a really definitive plan about how to inform their subcontractors and suppliers, defining very specific entry exit points. That gets disseminated out. It's kind of not, it's not like an email. I mean, it's real. Here's your instructions. Here's how you get there. This is the time of day. If you show up at another time and someone's going to hunt you down and do bad things to you. It was very, the whole process just showed a lot of thought. I mean, a lot more than I'm used to seeing.
Mine would be directed to the representative from Flint Builders. My next question, is there a project that you're particularly proud of that you'd like us to maybe go home and take a look at via a website of some sort, or something that you think really reflects best of what makes Flint Builders above and beyond?
Well, we did recently complete a project at UC Santa Cruz. That was the amphitheater project.
Oh, it's wow. Nice.
To get to. That would be a nice one. I think the client was ecstatic with that project. I think really what sets us apart are the people, to be honest with you. We proposed a very solid staff on this project, and our superintendent, our project manager, have extensive experience working in these types of environments and on schools and doing the logistical side of it. Actually, worked with Cindy many years ago. I don't know if she remembers me or not.
Oh, is that where I know you from?
Yeah. Saratoga Los Gatos.
That's right.
Yeah, when I worked for another firm.
Yeah.
Well, introduce yourself and what you do for the company.
My name is Scott Jewell. I am the area manager for Flint Builders for the Bay Area. I've been with them for about a year now. I was with another large international firm for about 15 years. I've been working almost exclusively in education for probably close to 20 years. So I worked on a lot of campuses, a lot of schools, worked with a lot of boards, a lot of citizens, bond oversight committees.
Were you with Gilvain?
I was.
Yeah.
Okay. Richard Myers.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And then a follow-up to that, just, and it's a very vague, but how close to budget can we get close to budget?
Well, I've got to be honest. You know, we don't know what we don't know.
Answer to that type question.
I think based on what we know, I think that anything is achievable. You know, at the end of the day, it's you got to get input from a lot of different stakeholder groups, and you got to massage that and manage that and make sure that we end up with something that everybody's accepting of. Everyone may not be happy, but hopefully they will be.
Everyone's never happy.
You know, that's the goal. And so, you know, design is a funny thing, and market conditions are, you know, are difficult right now. So we've got a lot to do, and we're excited, and we're ready to jump in and make it work.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify the agenda item. The action item is for pre-construction services. So what we're approving tonight is a portion of what will.
So this first step is
later.
Yeah, this first step, as I said, is pre-construction services. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go dig some holes, poke some holes in walls, look in ceilings, start really doing construction estimates from the guys who build it,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to our architectural estimates. Look at the phasing, how that impacts cost, timelines, time, money, all those things, and try to narrow this down. So that's the pre-construction services. As we go through that process, we're also going to be finalizing plans, which will also help narrow down the construction, which will tell us how far we can get into the process. So far, it's looking very promising at the two elementary schools there, that we're going to be able to achieve a significant portion of what we want to. As the plans develop and we get to the end of this, we go into a bidding phase. So they will bid out to all the subcontractors, and we'll come back with a guaranteed maximum price.
Okay.
There will be contingencies and things built in, but it will all be spelled out exactly what we expect of them and what they're expecting of us. And from that point, if we can all come to an agreement, the starting gun will go off and we'll start actual construction.
Madam President, I would like to be very clear for the record, because what I see on the cover sheet actually says that they are asking for approval of the lease-leaseback agreement for pre-construction services,
right,
and authorizing pursuing scope and pricing for contracts for construction services.
Right.
So I want to make sure that that is the recommendation that you're making, that is the proposal.
Is that clear with everyone? Yeah.
And just one last. Perhaps it's a typo. On the second page of the lease-leaseback agreement, it has SoCal, mine, site, and building.
Okay, that should be there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. It might have just been a carryover from another page of typo.
Sorry,
I'll just cross
okay.
it out for my own. Thank
okay.
you. And
yeah, for the record.
It's on the record now that it is not for that site.
Right.
Thank you,
buddy. Any comments from the public? It's an action item. Are we ready for a motion?
I move approval. Second.
Okay. Deb and Cindy. Suit recommendation?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain?
Thank you.
I'm going to ask Trevor to stay up for this next item. We have the recommendation, this new business, to adopt the CEQA negative declaration of the Harbor High School field project.
CEQA. A word that brings fear to all of us when we're getting this done. The good news is, when you did the baseball field at Harbor High, the folks that did the CEQA documentation on that did a very good job. So all the things that could be a problem have been identified.
Okay.
So we hired the same company, and it went sweet and smooth. There are no significant negative impacts. There's nothing specific that we need to do to change the scope of our project. And at this point in time, we're all clear to go from a CEQA standpoint.
Okay, go ahead, Patty.
Thank you. So we just piggybacked on the initial study from the baseball, basically.
We took all that information and put it into a new package.
Okay.
And we did have to do some extra stuff because of the lighting, but
okay.
And we'll just keep our early on adult stuff was dealt with.
Fingers crossed. I just want to make sure that we note that it's another typo. We didn't start this public review in 20,176. We might just want to change that date. Something happened there. I don't know. It's on your notice of intent to adopt next page. Or the first page of the actual intent.
So, got that change?
Thank you.
Any comments from the public? It's an action item. Is there a motion?
Move for adoption.
Second.
Okay. Cindy and Sheila? Students?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Keep abstaining.
Yeah. Thank you.
As a side note, if I may, we are actually going to be bidding that project first week in February. And we'll be, hopefully, the last meeting in February, we'll be able to guarantee maximum price contract to get the project underway.
Good.
They're hopeful for it.
Board policies. Our next item is board policies, and it says it's for first and or final reading. I'd just like to hear what the thoughts are from the board. Do we want to bring this back, or are you ready to talk about it? And
I hate dragging it out because I know I personally would like to bring it back.
Okay. And
that's a good idea.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to.
Oh, but Patty,
I have a question for Ms. Muriel. Is there anything by bringing it back that ties your hands from your working?
There's nothing. There's nothing on here that is time bound by Ed Code or anything like that.
Then I'm 110%.
So do we move for?
Someone needs to move for a first reading.
I move for a first reading.
Second.
Enthusiasm. Okay. Student reps, your recommendation?
Aye.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain.
Can I just add, in my conversation with Jeremy this week, he had a suggestion for one of the policies for us to make a change on it. Are you still interested in that, Jeremy? Mm-hmm. Do you want to share that with everyone so they know what it is and I can bring back language related to that?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Under local control and accountability plan, it's the idea that on day one of the meeting, all expenses and rationale and history of expenses be laid out so that the LCAP committee can function to its best ability. And in fact, that could be part of the philosophy, goals, objectives for any comprehensive plan, that we don't call a meeting with people until the materials are in place, because what's happened in the past is committees have been formed and then they're asked to approve things and they really don't have all the materials necessary until the last day that they meet, and then what's the point? So it's around that issue.
Sorry, Ms. Shona, could you just repeat that for me?
Can I ask for a clarifying? Can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
Based on what you've said, you know, we've created the executive summary. You and I've had lots of conversations about how executive summaries can support. If we're annually updating the executive summary of the LCAP, that would provide all that background in history, and that be reviewed as a part of each kickoff of
would that work? The responsibility of the district office to present those materials at the day of the first meeting. I think that's fair.
So does that work for everyone? Is that something?
I don't think we have to put it in the policy, but I think it's a good practice. I mean, I think it makes sense.
Well,
why not put it?
Why not?
I mean, I just feel that when we get that specific sometimes in policy, and occasionally there may it allows for absolutely no movement or
you know, kind of a strange one-off, which I can't envision that there would be, but there might be an opportunity for a committee to want to meet prior to talk about mission without looking at numbers. I mean, I'm just, I feel like sometimes I don't want to hamstring us. I totally agree with the, and I'll vote if you guys want to put it on there. I just, that was my thought, was that I feel like it's limiting. I think the spirit of what you're saying makes total sense. And
could it be a recommendation, not a policy?
I don't know.
Well, I'd like to see that it's a jumping off point and a start. We may review and revise policy if it hamstrings us, but we have to have, it has been part of the, I mean, I think about the visible learning. Where are we going with this? We have these people coming, and they seem to end up at these meetings where it's all, the input part has shifted, so I don't see a problem with putting it. I understand exactly what you're saying, Deb. We'd hate to be making so much policy we don't move whatsoever. But let's just use it as a starting point because we need to define it somehow.
So you'll put it in the language for it to come back and we'll read it again.
Yeah. Jeremy, would it get at what you want if I'm just trying to clarify and make sure that this captures what you're looking for? That district staff will utilize the executive summary to kick off the LCAP process at the beginning of each year to capture the history of the district LCAP and how resources have been allocated. Would that capture it, or am I not getting at?
Well, we can use that as a start.
So
there's the accountability piece. What are we spending our money on? How do we know whether or not it's effective? We're spending on it historically. Because if you ask people to come to the meeting without that, then it's exactly as Patty says, you know, where's the visible learning? It's impossible because there's no starting ground, there's no common core. So, but, you know, I'm fine with trying some language around it and bat it about.
Didi?
Well, I think what would help me as we talk about this in the next meeting is if you could give us a sense of what's the labor and time involved for your staff to do this on a regular basis. I guess we only have so much time. I agree that this would be very helpful and having that information available.
It'll be easier the second time we do it. Mm-hmm. It took more time the first time we did it, and we want to add to it. You know, we have thoughts about how we want to improve the summary for next year. So I think it'll be easier the second time. The first time we looked at a bunch of different models, and we're trying to to figure out what would work best for us. Mm-hmm. I think ultimately it's a good thing for us to have. It's just for now it's looking at updating and improving. So I think it'll get easier the more we do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's good. Thanks.
All right,
ready to move on?
I'm sorry. So tomorrow then, Chris will clarify, I want a motion to include, you know, first reading, including language from the superintendent to revise the specific policy, okay, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, our next item is the information superintendent mid-year update.
Okay. This is a really thick document. I am not going to go through it line by line. I'm going to talk a little bit about it, kind of in the scope of you know, the goals and action plans that we rolled out in September. And each year, I do that in September and give an update of where we are in January. Sometimes things shift a little bit based on, you know, what has happened and what's real. And, you know, we've talked about, you guys were talking about failure not being a bad thing. Failure is a first attempt in learning. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's, you know, and sometimes as we are working to implement something as a district or we have an aim, a learning intention, as we go along the way, we realize that the path to get there may be different than what we thought. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you update. This update covers some of those things that we're slowing down on, looking at a little bit differently. But the way I want to think about this, our first three district goals are about what we want for kids. It's the outcomes we want to have happen. And goals 4 through 6 are about how do we get there. Goal 4 is around what's our professional learning communities, what's our professional development, how do we build our team's capacity to get the outcomes in goals 1 through 3. Goal 5 is about how do we use our resources in a way to get goals 1 to 3 to happen. And goal 6 is about how do we leverage our community and our partnerships and our relationships with our community also to make those things happen. We've been talking a lot about how do we create, and you know, and I had a conversation with principals this last week about the LCAP. The first year we implemented the LCAP was my first year in the superintendency in 2014-15. We were supposed to start the process in the fall, but we didn't get directions on how to do it until February. And we had to execute our first LCAP and get it approved by June. And then they changed how it was all going to be done the next year. And they changed the template and everything we were supposed to do, so we had to completely do it again. And they changed it a little bit last year, not quite as much. It's all supposed to get better. And I think it's great intent. And it's been a complex process as a learning organization to go through. And one of the things that we did this last year that I'm proud of is we did a better job of taking the state template and taking what already existed as clear district goals and direction and vision and applying it to the template. And now what we're really working on is how do we measure impact? And that's a part of visible learning, too. It's one of the mantras of visible learning is know thy impact. And as a school teacher, as a classroom teacher, how do I know my impact? As a superintendent, how do I know my impact? How do I measure that? As an organization, how do we measure our impact? And in this document, we talked about RTI. In the past, we talked about RTI as our framework, response to intervention, as a framework for looking at the tiers of support in student learning that we want to have so we can meet the needs of every kid, no matter where they are on that learning spectrum. But now we're using and talking about MTSS. It's a different framework. It's a little bit more comprehensive, and our Ed Services team has spent the last year through a state grant learning more about that and how we can use the tools of the state framework to really look at our systems and to even help us narrow our focus so we can, you know, we've been trying as a district to meet tremendous needs of all kinds of kids and really working to make sure that demographics don't determine outcomes in our district and making sure that every child at every level, no matter where they are, whether they already know the standards and they need to be challenged to something else, or they're a couple grade levels behind in the standards, we need to accelerate their learning. So given the breadth of those challenges that all school districts face, we've been trying to do a lot of different things. And we've been trying to align that work so we can leverage resource in the best possible way to do that. And we're also looking at trying to measure things. And we're going to, when we have our study session on the 31st, the second part of it is going to be looking at a proposed set of new metrics for our goals. Part of what is challenging right now in education is the metrics have changed so much in the last few years. And so the baseline data that we had on our goals from 2010, the measures are changing. And we've adopted some new local measures that better match the state measures. And we're looking at the college and career readiness indicators in the state dashboard and the measures on that and thinking we need to align that better with what we're using as measures in the district. So we're going to bring that forward for you as all part of this process of looking at our systems and how are we using that information to measure where we are, to measure the impact of the investments we're making. And it's an iterative process. Instead of, I have it, and it's the end of a long night, instead of going through it slide by slide, I think that kind of summarizes the work of where we are. I'm excited about using MTSS as a framework to look at our LCAP, to narrow our focus, make sure we're using the resources in the most efficient way possible, and we're going to do some work with the leadership team next Thursday. They're going to do it while I'm not here. To begin looking at what we're doing, what we're measuring, what's the impact, and then we're planning 2 days of MTSF's retreat time with broader stakeholder groups in February. And we've done this every year for the last 3 years. It's been an RTI retreat. It's an MTSS retreat. Because when you look at our LCAP, it is about those layers of supports. That's what it's about. And taking that apart, thinking about where are we, what's yielding the impact we want, are there things we need to shift or adjust? Are there models that we could follow in a better way to look at how we're serving our students? Are there specific questions you have about any one of these goals or areas or things that we're working on that you'd like to talk about tonight?
Me. Okay, Sheila, then Dee Dee.
Okay. So this is not really a specific question, but think of it as, and it's definitely not meant as a negative comment about what we are doing now, because it's an overwhelming amount of things that have been put into place, that all of them with great promise. But it's my little advertisement for, I would like to see in the near future some kind of way that people could begin to look at career readiness in a different fashion than just CTE, that to broaden the way we think about it and to see if we can come up with some solutions that address careers separate from, well, of course, careers mean you have to have finished 4 years of college, but careers themselves, and what kind of creative things we might be able to do within this community, career-wise. So that's just my little advertisement for the future. I don't have that many more years left in the board or in my life. So I'm kind of hoping that that's something that we can look at. So.
All right, Dee Dee.
I'm really happy to see history and social science being mm-hmm. added to our very full plate of things to focus on. But the question I had, or it's just as we're moving forward, I know that you've suggested that we need to slow things down with the curriculum master plan. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. It's going to give more time and opportunity for input from the teachers and reflection, and how are we going to do this all, and how are we going to do this with the budget that we have. I think those are all positive things. And then there's this plan that we've got the curriculum master plan, and somehow we've got to develop the EL master plan in parallel to mm-hmm. a certain extent, which seems daunting. Mm-hmm. The curricular master plan seems daunting in and of itself, but we also need to build the EL master plan. So the question is, what are the strategies going to be to support our staff who got a lot on their plates, and yet this is really, really important work that they're doing?
So Marianne and Julia and Frank and I sat around the table this afternoon, and we were looking at our metrics, we were looking at data, we were looking at some cohort data, shows some promise, even though, you know, our grade level data is pretty flat. Our elementary cohort data on the CASP is pretty good. You know, it shows growth. Middle school, we're stalled, and we're seeing some of that countywide, but we also know that there are some places that are getting growth that we're not. Mm-hmm. So one of our strategies is to go look at some places that are getting the growth we want to see, especially with our ELs, mm-hmm. because that's a place where we've been historically. Not, you know, we're on par with our county, but we don't want to be on par with our county. Mm-hmm. So I think that part of our strategies is going to go look at some districts that are getting better results, and give us an opportunity to see, you know, what are the curriculum, what's their curriculum plan, what's their professional development plan, what kind of collaboration time, how are they building collective efficacy as a learning organization, and working with our teachers and our union leaders to look at how do we do this? What's the best way for us to do this moving forward, and creating some time for that. And our MTSS days will be a start of that, you know, more conversation around that. The Ed Services team has been working really hard to plan structures that will help facilitate that conversation. And it is, it's a big task. It's a big task. And we're taking out, you know, take it in chunks. The other thing, I think I may have shared this with some of you when I met over the course of this week with you. I have a friend who's in South San Francisco, and their district is going through a process of strategic abandonment. And looking at what are they letting go of so they can be focused really narrowly to get gains. And they're doing well with their English learners, too, and I'm going to set up an opportunity. Their demographics are different than ours, but I think there are things for us to learn from them. Set up an opportunity for Julia and Marianne and Frank to just have an initial conversation about what does that look like in their district? You know, how could we use that with our team to look at keeping a real solid focus and not overwhelming folks? Because that's been one of the conversations we've had with teachers. It's, you look at that curriculum master plan, it's pretty overwhelming. There's a lot there. And how do we make this doable? And you can only have a sense of efficacy if you know, I have the professional tools and time and resource to do something well. And we want to support our teachers in that. And they are doing the most important work that has the most significant impact on outcomes on our kids. And so we've got to provide them with as much support and time to look at that and explore that as professionals to take those next steps to make a difference for our kids. And our students, our student bodies are changing all the time, so it's, and the needs are changing all the time. So.
Hey, Chris, might I add to in that area of our independent planner? We're getting really excited about revisiting our process and looking at a district who has a life population that's been successful. I got a call 2 hours ago, so we're going to be taking a field trip down to interview some of our colleagues about some of the work and processes and systems they're looking at and what are they letting go to get this kind of work to move their second language learners. So Chris is going to have to put that in motion for us to take a field trip, which is very exciting.
Go ahead, Sheila.
Yeah, another comment. Just I was thinking as I was going through this of a decade ago or even 5 years ago and how much richness there is in this that did not exist before, and really appreciating that. I also think it's part of why we have to be careful about not overloading people. But in terms of the job you've done since you've been superintendent, I'm very appreciative of how many things you put in place, how many ideas, and how hard it is to keep all of that in my mind, therefore. But I wanted to, in particular, just point out that it has really struck me that in a community now that doesn't have a well-accepted central communication base that we had with the Sentinel back. Even if we hated it, we still had it. What you have done in order to be known and communicate with and be part of the community has, to me, been striking. I was thinking about it when we got the mailing. That the sense I'm getting from the community is that there is a feeling that they know that things are going well for Santa Cruz City Schools, and that they feel like things are happening that they wanted to have happen for a long time, and some things that they never even thought about. So I want to stop and thank you for that in the process of going through this.
Thank you for supporting all the things we've tried.
Cindy?
Certainly, this is really an impressive report and helpful for me to begin to get a sense of the complexity of all the initiatives. And some of these goals are so big and so aspirational. We can cross our fingers and work as hard as we can, but man, it's going to be really tough, particularly on that goal number 3, which says, will they eliminate the achievement gap? When I first read that, I thought, wow, that's a powerful goal to have written as a district. I'm all for it. But it takes really concentrated effort, and I'm really happy to hear what you're planning to do as a next step. Just two short things. One, in terms of the MTSS and a grant from the state and sort of rolling RTI as a piece of that, where does that come from? Will things actually be done significantly differently, or is it just a renaming and a repackaging of services we're already doing?
We should bring some of it will be services we're already doing, and some of it will be evaluating those services. Mm-hmm. And do we still need the services in the same way? The thing about MTSS, you know, I'm going to send you the definition that we worked with last week because I think it really, and I, late at night, I'm not, it's not coming to me in the in the best way, but it's about design and redesign of your plans of supports and your systems of supports and a cycle of looking at things and a system for looking at things. And I think it would be worthwhile to have Marianne and Julia or someone else from our Ed Services team to come give a brief overview of the MTSS and how, you know, MTSS, the symbol for it from the state, you know, the RTI is the pyramid. Mm-hmm. MTSS is an umbrella. Mm-hmm. And it's an umbrella over your systems of support, which includes RTI. But it also it's a Venn diagram, academic success, social emotional learning, behavior, whole child in the middle, kind of a way of looking at what you're doing in your schools to create opportunities for student success where they are.
And can I follow up with my second question? I assume there's a year-end report that follows this same structure, basically?
We haven't done that in the past. The board in the past has kind of, you know, we has evaluated me based on the superintendent's standards. Mm-hmm. I could do that.
No, I'm not.
I could, you know, I definitely could do that.
I'm not inviting more work on your plate. I'm just curious what the next step was. Because is there a report that comes to us that takes each of these goals and then gives some data with it in terms of, this tells us everything we've done, so to speak, but it doesn't really say, well, what are the outcomes of all that effort?
So the metrics, what we're going to be bringing to you in January is a set of new metrics to go with each of these goals.
Okay.
A proposed set of new metrics.
Okay.
Ultimately, we'll be seeking,
to
seek for your input.
To go from what we've done to what we've accomplished, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
In January, meaning?
At our study session on the 31st, I'm going to bring you a first reading. It's going to be a first opportunity to look at it. The first time you'll look at the ones that we had before, the ones we're proposing. And then on February 14th, Julia and Marianne will come back and talk more about those specific metrics and ask you to adopt them or to change them.
I have a comment about that. I mean, one of the things that I ran a school board 4 years ago is that we hear from teachers. And so we hear a lot from administrators these days. I much prefer to hear some of these reports from teachers in the classroom where the rubber meets the road. And, you know, maybe Julie and Marianne could do a brief introduction. Like, for example, they mentioned that David Norman at the sixth grade level at B40 Middle School was doing some great stuff with students being able to articulate where they're at in terms of their own progress, self-evaluation. So, you know, I prefer personally not to hear another report from DO, but from teachers on this topic. And I mean, it's fine for me at least if the district office frames it up, but then let's just hear a brief report of what it looks like in the classroom, successes, difficulties, failures, stuff like that from the teachers?
I think where that fits better, Jeremy, is with single plans, because mm-hmm. that's where the schools and the site staffs take the district goals that the board has laid out. These were district goals that came from the board and from processes in 2010, and we've appreciated having consistency in those goals, and then makes them personal to their schools and their data and their demographics and set goals from them. This is the central office level goals that teams work with and set their site level goals from. So I'm not sure that would be the particular report, but I hear you that you'd like to see more teachers presenting, and we
just
did
more practical. This is what it looks like in the classroom sort of stuff. And it's been a long time actually since we've heard that. And the other thing, coming back to the notion of visible learning, so show us the visible learning from the point of view of the teacher and classroom, because otherwise it's just somewhat theoretical, and that's my preference.
Are you thinking like the study sessions we had where we had the teachers that were showing
us?
So that's what you're meaning?
Yeah.
I like that.
And
okay.
I think it's also empowering for the teachers and their sites when there's a sense, an ongoing sense, that teachers are going to the school board meetings and we're listening and having these interactions with them.
Didi's light was on.
Yeah. I hear you, Jeremy. And I agree, it's wonderful to hear the teachers because it brings these theoretical things to life. I heard that tonight, mm-hmm. because Julia and Mariana are going to the school sites and spending time in classrooms. So I think there needs to be a balance. I mean, they give us the bird's eye view of what's happening across the grade levels, and it's nice to have some bright spots of what some teachers are doing. And I feel like we need a balance between the two. This is what I'm trying to say.
Thank you.
I would like in some form an overview. I'm not sure if it has to be a presentation or of MTSS. Because I don't quite grasp it yet. It would be helpful.
Could this be written, or do you want to...
It could be written, yeah.
We can prepare something.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if you have anything else, the meeting's adjourned, and we'll go to closed session.
Okay, have one. There was a day that I got a little bag that I have all of that.
Oh, I know. What do you do with them? When I came on, I think it was Don Maxwell at Med School. What's your filing system like? Filing system?
Pile,
yeah.
And then trash can at some point.
Different styles,
yeah.
For different folks, right?
A year passes and it's like opening my trunk and saying, okay, so this stuff's been here for you.
I haven't looked at you, I haven't needed you.
Right. Maybe that means it's time for you to go.
I've got my stacks of papers. You know, I've got the Cabrillo papers. I've got my own business
now.
Papers. And oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
I have a report. I'm in the middle of writing in a report that I wrote that I haven't figured out how to put the stuff away yet. And then I have all my daughter's GRE stuff. And then, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then there's just stuff. Stuff. Life stuff.
Yeah. And isn't it nice that we're so paperless now? Uh-huh. Ridiculous. It's not going to fit, huh?
Well,
yeah,
I had the other bit.
You were well hydrated, thank you.
Yeah.
You were well hydrated. Okay, so I'm good.
You're
going to be able to hang in there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
A little while ago.
That's right. Home stretch.
That's right. That's rhetorical, right? I don't think
I'm fading fast.
Okay.
You leave your stuff right here, Miss.